Thank you and good morning. Title of my talk is Four Parameter Double Exponential Model Describes Decay of Hybrid Bermuda Grass Thatch. Well, that's a mouthful if you try to say it a couple of times, but the research is actually quite interesting. I've been involved in thatch research for a number of years, dating back to the early 1980s, but even since the 1920s, research has been done to find ways to control thatch and accumulation of it, especially on putting surfaces. And a part of that research has involved making measurements to try to characterize the decay of thatch. And that's been a pretty fairly big topic over, you know, like I said, the last 30 to 40 years, probably. And if you actually go back and look at thatch history over time, there's actually thatch research dating back to as early as 1926, okay? And as I said, part of this research has involved making measurements to help characterize the decay of thatch. And in fact, if I can make this cursor work, these are some pictures and figures that I presented back in 1985 at the ASA meetings, some of my original work when I was in graduate school. And what we did here is we actually measured the thickness of thatch. And we found a product here that actually, you know, reduced thatch thickness significantly, and I reported on it and published a paper on it. But we also looked at the organic content and things like bulk density. There have been a number of parameters that have been measured over time. Empirical modeling helps to understand decay processes a little bit better. Models are numerical attempts to describe natural events with an objective of assessing and predicting observed events and developing or modifying management practices. And when I first began thatch research back in the early 80s, I actually did some empirical modeling back then, but we did it by hand because there were no computers. I mean, when I wrote my master's thesis, that was on like a 64K Commodore. So the programs that we have now to do this kind of work were simply not available. And so it's been pretty nice, and we're very fortunate to have this technology to be able to use. So the objective of the research I'm going to talk to you about today was to try to find a suitable model to use to help describe the decay of hybrid Bermuda grass thatch. And in Florida, where I live, most of the putting surfaces there are composed of one variety or another of hybrid Bermuda grass, either with the older TIF Dwarf or even in some cases TIF Green 328. And now you get to the Ultra Dwarfs, Champion, and TIF Eagle, and Mini Verde, and grasses like that. One of the problems with those grasses is that they produce a significant amount of organic matter and a significant thatch layer, and that becomes very much a management problem for most golf course superintendents in our area. And the bent grasses in cool season areas as well produce a lot of organic matter and thatch. So for this research, what we did is we looked at the CO2 carbon that was released from either TIF Dwarf or TIF Eagle thatch over a 24-hour period of time over 20 days. And then what we did was we plotted that as percent thatch carbon remaining versus time. And we'll get to that in a minute. And so what we're really looking at here in this research is the evolution of CO2 off of decaying thatch. And what I wanted to try to do in this research is to find models to use to help describe that release of that CO2. So we began the research by collecting some thatch. We collected it from some TIF Eagle, or a TIF Eagle and a TIF Dwarf putting green located in Fort Myers, Florida at a place called Edison College, where I used to be a professor. I took that thatch and I air dried it for several days. We ground it to 20 mesh with a Wiley mill, and we stored it in glass jars in the dark until we were ready to use it. And then we weighed a specific amount, in this case 5.000 grams of thatch using a Mettler balance, weighed it to the nearest milligram, and we placed it in some small 30 mil size Kymax glass beakers. And we wetted that thatch with 1 mil of water per gram of thatch. And that was kind of an arbitrary amount of water to use. We could have used more, we could have used less, but in this case and for this research, we just wanted to make sure that the water was not limiting for microbial decay to occur. And then we used a very, very old method that's been written about many, many times in agriculture, where we actually took the glass beaker containing our thatch, put it inside a mason jar, screwed the lid on tight, okay, and put 10 mils of one normal base in the bottom of the jar. And that base acted as a CO2 trap. And what happens is that the CO2 that's evolved off the thatch is sorbed up by the base, converted to sodium carbonate, and then we can quantify how much CO2 carbon is actually released by the thatch by titrating that alkali right in that jar with one normal hydrochloric acid. And that gave us values of the number of milligrams of carbon dioxide carbon released per gram of thatch. And we measured that each 24 hours over a period of 20 days. And I did this several times. Some of the data that we got, and this is actually carbon dioxide carbon evolution data in a number of milligrams trapped per gram of thatch. And we looked at the dark lines here, the dark columns are TIF dwarf, and the white columns are TIF eagle. And every time we would do this kind of a study, on the very first day we would always see the most CO2 come off. Okay? And that's because the soluble components of that thatch carbon, the sugars, the proteins, the very simple carbohydrates are going to be the ones that are most easily mineralized by the microbes that are just existing in that thatch. And this was done at room temperature. This is not, and you know, our room temperature in my laboratory at that time was about the temperature it is in here now. I mean, it was a little bit chilly. And if we were to actually elevate the temperature, we could get things to go faster. But you know, that was not within the scope of what we're doing in this study. The second day would come around, and we would see less carbon dioxide, carbon come off. And then we would see an almost steady decline going out to about 10 days or so, and then the curves began to level off. And this is data that is combined over two separate experiments that I conducted, and these are the means. Now, when we looked at this data and we plotted it as milligrams of carbon dioxide carbon accrued over time, over 20 days, we saw a pretty clear separation between TIF eagle, which is the clear dots, and TIF dwarf. And in fact, these were significantly different. And in fact, TIF dwarf, every time we did it, decayed faster than TIF eagle, no matter what we did. Okay? And I think that's important to remember. That's not the focus of this study so much as it is looking at the modeling, but it's important to understand that different turf grass types, their thatches are going to decay at different rates. And now what we did was took and we measured the amount of carbon that was in that thatch. And we did that a couple different ways. We burned it by loss on ignition and made a calculation. And we did a wet oxidation method. And we did it a number of times until we got to where we found that I thought that we had a good stable number looking at percent carbon in that thatch. And we're able to, by taking the amount of CO2 carbon evolved from the thatch and subtract it out, we were able to plot percent thatch carbon remaining over time. And when we did this, we got very nice mineralization curves here, and these are very classic curves. These have been reproduced in agricultural experimentation a number of times over many, many years. But we also saw in this, if I can make the cursor work again here, is that we saw here's our TIF eagle with getting out to 20 days, having a significant amount of thatch carbon remaining compared to TIF dwarf, which decayed a little bit faster. When we repeated this experiment, we see the same thing. Here's our TIF eagle, here's our TIF dwarf, and we got better at making the measurements. And as you begin to make measurements, you get better and better at it, hopefully. And so our standard errors went down, but we have clear differences here, especially at the end of 20 days, between these two cultivars. Now what we did is we took these mineralization curves, okay, these decay curves, and we fit models to these curves. And four empirical models were fit to these data to determine which one, if any, was going to best minimize the residual sum of squares. And the four models that we picked, the first one was a two-parameter, single exponential model, okay, of the function y equals a e to the minus bt. Okay, t is time, b is your rate constant, this is a natural log of, this is your original amount. This has to do with the natural base of the log. We used a modified three-parameter single exponential model where we have three parameters in the exponent. Okay. We used a hyperbolic decay model, which was not exponential, and we used a four-parameter double exponential model after Bond and Rosswell and many, many other people who have used this. This is kind of a standard model that's used in carbon mineralization studies and nitrogen mineralization studies. In our research, the curve fitting was done with Sigma Plot 10, use the Marquardt-Levenberg logarithm, and that program checked to see how well these equations fit until the residual sum of squares, the difference between them, no longer decreased. And we ran some additional statistics on these regression models, especially with the when we looked at independence of residuals, things like checking for normality of the distribution, independence of residuals. And what we see and what we read about statistics is that when we have these kinds of conditions pass, that the models become valid or are more valid and more reliable. It's not that they're not reliable on their own, but when they pass these tests for statistical significance, the models tend to be probably more valid. And so what we see here in some of our results with TIFDWRF, on our first model, we come up with 97.7E. Here's our rate constant, 0.005 per day. We have a fairly good R squared. Our residual mean squares are a little high, though. We passed the test for normality and variance, but we failed the test for independence of residuals. Likewise, with our next two models, when we get to the four-parameter model, we have extremely good R-squareds, we have very low residual mean squares, and it passed all our statistical tests of significance, especially with independence, with respect to independence of the residuals. The same thing went for TIFF-EAGLE, same kind of results. So what we concluded from this is that the model that best met our criterion that we established at the beginning was our four-parameter double exponential model. And the information that this thing gives us is that the amount of carbon remaining at any time is going to be equal to the original amount, okay, times the base of the natural log, which is about 2.718, using these exponents, again, which are our rate constants, minus B or minus D, and T is time. And what this gives us is two carbon pools of thatch, a fast pool, material that goes off really quickly, and a slow pool that has recalcitrant materials that don't degrade very quickly. And so for TIFF-DWRF, we had fast pools that gave us either 6 or about 4.4% of thatch carbon going off at a rate constant of 0.24, okay, per day, and we had 94% of thatch with a, going off at 0.0025 per day. Okay, slow pool carbon here. Okay, they had differing turnover time. So our fast pool turned over at about 4 days. Our slow pool turned over at about 400 days. When we looked at TIFF-DWRF, our fast pool turned over at 4 days, and the slow pool turned over at 834 days, almost double, more than double. And again, we saw that in the plots. Okay, when we looked at fast pool rate constants, okay, these numbers here, they differed from the slow pool rate constants, obviously, but they really didn't differ among themselves. We looked at the slow pool, okay, you know, there were differences between TIFF-EAGLE and TIFF-DWRF. So what we conclude from this is that the model that best minimized our residual sum of squares was the four-parameter double exponential model. It elucidated two carbon pools with differing rate constants, fast pool and a slow pool. In our study here, fast pool turnover times were similar, but slow pool turnover times differed, with TIFF-EAGLE decaying more slowly. The four-parameter double exponential model had been successfully used, at least in TIRF for the first time, to describe differences in decay between TIFF-DWRF and TIFF-EAGLE. And using this model in subsequent research might just help understand and expand the understanding of thatch decay. And I'll finish this talk by saying that this paper that I published in Crop Science a couple of years ago is the first reported publication citing the use of empirical modeling to examine thatch decay.
Quick question.
Good morning. Would you consider using an independent data set to test the model?
Sure.
And second question is,
Well, I'm actually back in the private sector now. I don't have a laboratory anymore. Otherwise, I'd be continuing this research. But I'd certainly be willing to talk with you about it if you have some data you'd like to run through it. I've still got SigmaPlot on the computer, and that's all we really need to do. And that's one thing I think that needs to happen. What I would really like to see is somebody out there, graduate student who's really motivated, pick these models up and begin to run with them, because I think there's a lot that this could add to our understanding of thatch decay.
All right, thank you. Probably better